Well, good morning. We are in Daniel 5. So let us get a volunteer to read the first four verses of Daniel chapter 5. Thank you.
1-4.
1-4.
King Belshazzar made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in front of 1,000. Belshazzar, when he tasted the wine, commanded that the vessels of gold and of silver that Nebuchadnezzar his father had taken out of the temple in Jerusalem be brought, that the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. Then they brought in the golden vessels that had been taken out of the temple, the house of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone.
Okay. Pretty interesting little thing going on here. So who is Belshazzar?
He's now king, son of Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay. Does anyone else have any information about this guy? Yes, sir.
I think he led the Jews back to Jerusalem.
I think you're wrong. Sorry. Big long name, though, right?
It's all those long names.
Funny names.
Hard to keep them straight.
Well, we do need to understand a little bit who Belshazzar is. So in reality, he is Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. His mother was likely Nebuchadnezzar's daughter, and she was actually, well, possibly, I don't know how thoroughly they know all of this stuff. This comes from other history, but she was actually I'm confusing her with somebody else here. But so Nebuchadnezzar was the guy we were talking about last week, the really, really good chapter about his being humbled by God. And he finally had a really good, appears to be a very total response to God's dealings with him. So Nebuchadnezzar, he died in 562, which was quite there's a big time gap between chapter 4 and 5. And so he died in 562 after being the Babylonian king for 43 years. His son became king when he died, and his son was murdered by Nebuchadnezzar's son-in-law, a guy named Nergal-Sharezer. He was married to one of Nebuchadnezzar's daughter. He killed Nebuchadnezzar's son after 2 years and became king. And let's see. Yeah, so, and this is the guy named in Jeremiah 39, which is a really good chapter to read, because there Jeremiah is pronouncing judgment on Babylon also, which is what this chapter is going to end up with. But so that guy reigned for 4 years, and then he died, and then his son, Labashi-Mardu, he was on the throne for 2 months, and then he was murdered by another of Nebuchadnezzar's son-in-laws, married to another one of Nebuchadnezzar's daughters, and that guy was Nabonidus. No, that's not right. Nabonidus, something like that. Nabonidus, I don't know. I'm not Babylonian. So that guy, Nabonidus, was a progressive guy, and after Nebuchadnezzar died, with the sons-in-law and the murderers, things deteriorated a bit, but then Nabonidus restored some of the kingdom, did more conquering. In fact, he didn't even live in Babylon for much of his reign. And actually, his son, Belshazzar, was installed as the regent in Babylon, in the city of Babylon itself. And you'll see that it shows up later here too. So anyway, that's all the history that happened between Nebuchadnezzar dying and this event here. So that's the who. Okay, get the right button here. And when was this? So I said this was many years later. In fact, we do know exactly when. According to secular history, they've got it down to the day when this event happened. And that was on, come on, machine. All right, there it is. October the 12th, 539. So you can see Nebuchadnezzar died in 562, and then all that history I just clumsily told you about went on until 539. So that is the night when this chapter 5 concludes. Any questions so far? There is a question. Good.
Yes, when you were saying so is it Belshazzar was on the throne, but his father was currently the king?
He was
out of the.
Yes.
And so he was kind of like
They called him a co-regent.
Co-regent were.
He was just the puppet king, but no, he was in charge. He obviously had authority.
And what was his father's name again?
Nabonidus. No, I'm saying that wrong. Nabonidus. Nabonidus. And chances are there's other labels depending where you run across them in history. Because you've got these several languages we're talking about at the same time, that the names show up differently. So like the other brother-in-law, Nergal-Sarrazer, he's called in Jeremiah, Nergal-Sarrazer. They like Z's and N's and M's in that language, and lots of vowels. Any other questions? Yes. Okay, that all happened prior. All of that, see, this is in 539. Nebuchadnezzar, actually, that happened before he died, which was in 562. So that was 20-some years earlier, or 30 years earlier.
That's quite a bit of time.
So King Nebuchadnezzar is dead now?
Yeah. No, this is long gone. He's long gone. This is 30 years after he died.
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. There's a big gap between chapters 4 and 5. And remember, though, yes?
This guy was king the while Nebuchadnezzar.
No. This is actually a son of his daughter, so later. And of course, we have no idea when he was born or what his age was. Yes, sir?
The gist of it is, Nebuchadnezzar reigned for a long time. He had this whole incident, he writes about it, yada, yada, yada. He dies, and it just kind of throws the nation into this period of of king, assassination, assassination, all within the royal family until Belshazzar's father comes in and kind of takes control of things and then places Belshazzar on the throne.
That's exactly what I should have said. Yeah. Very good. Yes. It, you know, it's so typical of nations in those years, you know, the kings and their families, they seem to be immune from any kind of consequences of their actions. And we need to keep that in mind. They feel immune from consequences to their actions. Because, after all, they're king of the biggest, greatest power in the world. Who can say anything against them? Okay, and again, we covered the where. This is in the city of Babylon, while the actual over king is not there. He's living elsewhere. He's conquering. You can study about that if you wish, but he had won some more battles and had taken more territory for the country of Babylonian kingdom. Okay, so why are they having this feast? This is the big deal. Why are they having this feast? And do you notice the size of this feast?
1,000 of his nobles.
This is a pretty big party he's throwing. And
praise the gods of gold, bronze, silver, iron, and stone. Is it kind of a worship?
It is. Well, and the significant thing is that he, as you notice there, what's the major thing that he did here?
Got vessels from the temple.
So he was feeling pretty good. So the context here is we really need to understand that he is feeling like he's the big guy, the real king. Because as we noticed last week, Nebuchadnezzar had those things from the temple, and so that made him feel like he conquered that god, and God was correcting him through all of that time. Right? That's what we heard last week. Over the couple of weeks, Nebuchadnezzar had the opinion that because he conquered Jerusalem, he was bigger than the God of Israel. And Belshazzar, which is repeating that idea here, because he's using those cups that his grandfather had captured. The other part of this story is that Babylon was under siege at this moment. This is the big thing, and we don't get that here in the picture. Daniel, of course, knew about that, but the Persians were actually camped out and had been camped out around the city for a long time, maybe a couple of years. But because remember what we were told about the walls of Babylon?
So they're under siege?
They're under siege. And he's having a party. Because of the walls, because of the city. Tell us what you told us last week.
There were some like 80 feet wide. You could race chariots on top of the walls. There were two walls.
And there were there were double walls. So in order to get into the city, you're going to have to climb this big wall, and you assume the army is just sitting up there laughing at them and looking at them. And if they get over the one, they still have to do it again. So they felt very, very secure. They were having this night of revelry and indulgence because they thought they were impregnable. He was thumbing their noses, they were thumbing their noses at the Persians and at God at the same time. it reminded me of what we heard in last week about David when he became king and decided he wanted to take Jerusalem. What did the Jebusites say? What was their boast? Because Jerusalem's up high on a hill, and taking it requires a lot of...
The lame could defend the city.
Yes, the blind and the lame could defend the city.
So same concept.
Same idea. These guys thought they were impregnable. Along with that, they had stockpiled lots of stuff in there. They thought they had... They had enough to last for 20 years. They were just going to sit in there and eat, drink, and be merry for 20 years before the Persians had a chance of getting in. And of course, the Euphrates River ran through the city, so they had no lack of water. Obviously, they weren't concerned about anybody contaminating the water or anything like that. Chemistry wasn't a big subject in those days. So that is, yeah, I missed my cue there. That is the why they were having the party. They thought they were impregnable. Any questions to this point? You've got the picture. Having a party with the opposing army surrounding them. Plus, they were Babylon, the biggest power in the world. Why should they be concerned? And so they were having just a fantastic party. Okay, let's read about the interruption to this party. Somebody want to read verses 5 and 6 for us, please? Thank you.
It says, immediately the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, opposite the lampstand. And the king saw the hand as it wrote. Then the king's color changed, and his thoughts alarmed him. His limbs gave away, and his knees knocked together.
Has that ever happened to you? Have you been so scared that your knees were knocking together? I mean, that's the last thing that happens before you fall on the ground. Psalm 33:13 says, the Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of men. From the place of his dwelling, he looks down on all of the inhabitants of the earth. So this is what happened there. God is looking from heaven, and he's seeing some revelry, some abuse, and some despising him. Because these guys were, what were they doing?
They were profaning the objects of God's worship.
And they were putting themselves on their own pedestals.
Yeah.
And explicitly they were
worshiping the gods as gold and silver made by man's hands.
Made by man's hands, yes. So now we have a hand writing on the wall. Truly amazing. So, his response is?
Oh, crap.
I'm taking my wise men.
Yes.
Fear.
So, and we have to say, you know, he pretty much does what we do too. When we're in a bind, what's the first thing we do? We ask men. We look to man. We look to ourselves, and then we look to man instead of praying to God. So he called for his wise men. So let's read
7 through 9?
Yeah, let's...
Yeah, you got it?
I got it right there, yes. Let's read 7 through 9.
The king called aloud to bring in the conjurers, the Chaldeans, and the diviners. The king spoke and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Any man who can read this inscription and explain its interpretation to me shall be clothed with purple and have a necklace of gold around his neck and have authority as third ruler in the kingdom." Then all the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the inscription or make known its interpretation to the king. Then King Belshazzar was greatly alarmed. His face grew even paler, and his nobles were perplexed.
Okay, so you notice he gave, you would, if you could interpret that, you would be what?
Rewarded greatly.
By what? By how?
Would be the third in line over the rule of Babylon.
Yeah, so you see that's the other, anyway, that's the note that Belshazzar wasn't the king, he was the second king. So his only, he wasn't going to give up his position, but you could be third, plus all the other rewards. Any thoughts or questions? Yes. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But this is literally, they saw a hand, just a hand appeared and was writing words on the wall. But we've taken that as something that's become an expression that we use. And a lot of times we take expressions like, you know, we're taught about how the David and Goliath thing is practically always misused. But here this, we know what this means. And we take that to mean, we'll learn what that means. Because we use it in the correct way. And the other thing was, It's a little weird, but again, this goes back to Nebuchadnezzar when he had his dream and he called all these guys in. These are probably all different guys now because that was some years ago. But he called on his wise men and there was no value, right? Chances are Belshazzar heard that story too. It's very probable he had been told that story. But he calls in the wise men. They can do nothing. And then we have a new character here. And that is the queen. Now the queen apparently is not Belshazzar's wife because it says his wives and concubines were all there. So this is presumed to be either his mother, Nebuchadnezzar's daughter, or some other previous queen that knew about Daniel. So let's read that. Somebody. Okay, go ahead.
Chaldeans and astrologers, because of an excellent spirit, knowledge and understanding to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve problems were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show
the interpretation.
So somebody still remembered their history. Something that's always good for us to do. So even though, you know, the context here is the Israelis have been, had their kingdom destroyed by Babylon. Many of them were in terrible straits in Israel, and the others had been deported and were in Babylon and probably also scattered elsewhere in the kingdom. And yet God still expects and deserves reverence for him. He's disciplining his people. And just because they have been evil and deserve this, God isn't evil and he doesn't deserve being treated like that. And so Belshazzar has ignored lessons that he should have learned from his about his grandfather. You know, to me, it's a really cool thing. If you, in fact, let's go back and look at chapter 4, the very first verse, first three verses. In fact, how about somebody reading those first three verses? Like you.
I'll do that.
You have a good voice.
Nebuchadnezzar the king, to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language that live in all the earth, may your peace abound. It has seemed good to me to declare the signs and wonders which the Most High God has done for me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation.
So from this, it appears that, you know, Nebuchadnezzar published his testimony to the whole nation. And certainly Belshazzar would have known about this, totally should have known about this. And he just ignored it. It doesn't take long for us to forget our lessons. So it's only been, 30 years since Nebuchadnezzar died, and 30 years is a long time for a lot of people in this room. It's before you were born, maybe. And so paying attention to history is what this lesson is about. And we're here to tell you that. So then let's go ahead and read. Can I get another reader for the response to Daniel? And before we read this, just remember, this is a king, a powerful king, in front of all his favorite people. So he has a face to protect here. Okay, thank you.
13 to 16.
Whatever that said up there, I hope I'm right.
Yep.
It says, then Daniel was brought in before the king. The king answered and said to Daniel, you are that Daniel, one of the exiles of Judah, whom the king my father brought from Judah. I have heard of you that the spirit of the gods is in you, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom are found in you. Now the wise men, the enchanters, have been brought in before me to read this writing and make known to me its interpretation. But they could not show the interpretation of the matter. But I have heard that you can give interpretations and solve problems. Now if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, you shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around your neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom.
Okay, so you see how he takes credit for knowing about him. so he gave, so remember, so this again, there's quite a bit of time, so apparently Daniel is not really part of the normal court, where he might have known about him. So a lot of his position that he had with Nebuchadnezzar has, you know, dissipated or gone away or been ignored. But again, remember, Belshazzar is in front of all of his nobles, 1,000 of them. So this is a public event as far as Daniel's concerned. So let's go ahead and read Daniel's answer to him. How does Daniel respond to the big king in front of all these people? Somebody care to read? Okay, thank you.
17 through 28.
Yep.
Volunteer. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, "Let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. Nevertheless, I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. O king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar your father kingship and greatness and glory and majesty. And because of the greatness that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he killed, and whom he would, he kept alive. Whom he would, he raised up, and whom he would, he humbled. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened so that he dealt proudly, he was brought down from his kingly throne, and his glory was taken from him. He was driven from among the children of mankind, and his mind was made like that of a beast, and his dwelling was with the wild donkeys. He was fed grass like an ox, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven until he knew that the Most High God rules the kingdom of mankind and sets over it whom he will. And you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, though you knew all this. But you have lifted up yourself against the Lord of heaven, and the vessels of his house have been brought in before you, and you and your lords, your wives, and your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see or hear or know, but the God in whose hand is your breath and whose are all your ways you have not honored. Then from his presence the hand was sent, and this writing was inscribed. And this is the writing that was inscribed. Mene, mene, tekel, and parson. This is the interpretation of the matter. Mene, God has numbered the days of your kingdom and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then Belshazzar gave the command, and Daniel... Oh, was that the end? Sorry. I was getting excited. That was...
Well, this was an exciting story. This is one of the most, among the most well-known stories in all the Bible. Between David and Goliath and the Daniel in the lion's den, this has to be right up there with them. And it's pretty impressive, and it's the only time it's happened in history that we're aware of. And it happened, you know, it's like that happening in Washington, D.C. This was a big, big deal. So what was Daniel's attitude?
He was not afraid to say, "You're a fool," basically.
Yes, he definitely did not show any fear or intimidation whatsoever, and he calls him out. Just so amazing that he recited all of that and then was able to say, even though you knew that, you have exalted yourself. And then, of course, about the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see, hear, or understand. And then, the God in whose hand you are is now writing on the wall. So let's look at any other comments before we go into the words.
You probably won't catch a reference, but there's this movement, this thug-like movement. He needs to be a part of it, where they'll take video clips of people and throw sunglasses on them and give them a cigar and a hat, and it'll just say thug-like, like, "Don't mess with me," kind of thing. And that's totally Daniel's attitude, and I love it. Just, "Your dad was an idiot, you're an idiot too, you need to bow down and honor God. I just love that attitude that he has.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting in the beginning of 5 where, well, not the beginning, but when the queen comes in, she says, when she's even talking about Daniel, she says, there's a man in your kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And so they again say it like this isn't the one true God that Nebuchadnezzar was kind of acknowledging at the end of 4. He was saying the Most High and all of that at the end of 4. And then she goes to saying the holy gods. And then Daniel comes back in saying this is the one true God again and is kind of trying to lay that back down and tell them like your life is in his hand. That's just kind of cool to see that contrast, but kind of sad that they had already forgotten.
Well, when you worship false gods, you're afraid of them. You know, that's the crazy thing about man. He knows, as Romans says, we know that there is a God, but we just can't elevate him enough, because to elevate him lowers ourselves just way too much. Okay, Mene, what does that mean? So the first thing also was that these words, most from all indications, were Aramaic. So why couldn't their conjurers and wise men even read the words?
That's a good question. God had a hand in it.
That's exactly right. God had a hand in it. The foolishness of God is wiser than the wisdom of the people, so they weren't able. Okay, so Mene, his kingdom has been calculated. So God has looked at the entire kingdom, not just Belshazzar, and not just the other king, the whole kingdom, and it's been calculated, and the tekel means that Belshazzar has been weighed and he doesn't measure up. All your efforts and all your pomp is not worth a thing. Perez, and here, what's that mean? I don't have
been to. Dismissed.
There you go. Yes, your kingdom is chopped up, and it's very interesting. There's no time for. Well, there is time, but not very much time, to repent and bow before the God of the universe, the Most High God. So, then I skipped the other one, sorry. So, Upharsin, Daniel, changed that word a little bit, and it means so Perez was actually the word Upharsin, but Daniel changed it to Perez, which was a play on the word Persians, because that's who was sitting outside their walls. Of course, the other thing was that he miscalculated a little bit in his arrogance about the security of his city. So Daniel is honored then. I'll read 29. Belshazzar gave the orders, and they clothed Daniel with purple, put a necklace of gold around his neck, and issued a proclamation concerning him that he now had authority as third ruler in the kingdom. Wow, quite a promotion. He's now third ruler. So instead of killing him, which was a possibility for for his bold statements, is actually a serious sermon right there. He did do, at least humbled himself enough to do what he said he would do, and gave him all that honor. But it was short-lived. In that same night, Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, was slain, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom at about age of 62. So Daniel's honor lasted for a couple of hours. And it's interesting, of course, we find out later that Daniel wasn't part of that. So how did the Persians get in there? Anybody know? Yes.
They came in under the where the waterways were, and went under the city. They went right. They diverted the Euphrates.
Yep, they diverted it. They dug a canal while, and this had been going on for some time, but obviously out of sight, upriver, they dug a trench and were able to divert the entire river away from the city. And they were just sitting there waiting, and they just came into the city from both sides, and everybody was mindless about it. And as somebody said, they came in and took over the city without a shot being fired.
They were all partying.
Yeah, well, they were drunk and partying and drunk. So it's amazing how dishonoring God does something about it. And this is our lesson for us. This is our lesson for our lives. We need to pay attention to history. And we have, you know, a huge book of God's dealing with man in history. And we better not ignore it or pretend it doesn't matter or that it's not important. Any other comments?
So do we know who the Persians are? David?
They're Persians.
They're Iranians.
Yes, they are the Iranians.
Yeah, they're Iranians.
But it was a mixed group. It was Medes and Persians. That's why he said it was divided. And so there was a kind of a, what's the word I'm looking for? A cooperation between the two cultures that took over the Babylonians. And they were going back to the image. Which group is this now? Nebuchadnezzar's first image?
The statue dream.
Well, the statue dream, yes. Not the image that he built, but the one he had in the dream.
The first was gold.
Yep, and that was Nebuchadnezzar specifically. And now we have switched over to which metal?
Silver,
yeah, the next one. So there's still a lot of history pre-written yet to come.
And Jerry, when you were talking about judgment coming and there not being much time for judgment and to repent while there's still judgment, that sparked in my mind this passage from Zephaniah. I just want to read a couple of verses from it.
Sure.
That's kind of his whole message, to repent while there's still time before the day of the Lord. And it says in Zephaniah 1:14, near is the great day of the Lord, near and coming very quickly. Listen, the day of the Lord. In it, the warriors cry out bitterly, a day of wrath in that day, a day of trouble and distress, a day of destruction and desolation, a day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and thick darkness, a day of trumpet and battle cry against the fortified cities and the high corner towers. I will bring distress on men, so that they will walk like the blind, because they have sinned against the Lord, and their blood will be poured out like dust, and their flesh like dung. neither their silver nor their gold will be able to deliver them on that day of the Lord's wrath. And all the earth will be devoured in the fire of his jealousy, and he will make a complete end, indeed a terrifying one, of all the inhabitants of the earth. So that was a cool passage.
That is very applicable, and I should have taken a little time to take us to Jeremiah 39, because this same, or this Belshazzar's father was actually in Jerusalem after they captured Jerusalem, and he was there with Nebuchadnezzar when he killed Zedekiah, killed Zedekiah's kids, and then blinded him. So Nebuchadnezzar also, in verse 11 of 39, Nebuchadnezzar gave orders about Jeremiah, take him and look after him, do nothing harmful to him, but rather deal with him just as he tells you. Nebuchadnezzar was actually being, so yeah, Nebuchadnezzar had there's a lot of evidence that he had a change of heart. So it's just amazing. So the one other thing I wanted to mention, well, a couple of things. Yeah, so the handwriting on the wall, what does that mean? From this story, do you come to a conclusion what we mean when we say the handwriting's on the wall?
The truth is right in front of you.
Well, judgment is right in front of you. Judgment is coming. That's what we mean by that.
Promise judgment.
Yep.
Take it to the bank.
Yep. Guaranteed. So the other thing is going back again to Nebuchadnezzar, to chapter 4, verse 1. I just think it's so great that he publicized his own humbling. He publicized God's honor and glory. And when we do stupid stuff and God corrects us, we need to make sure that we publicize that too, because other people need to learn those lessons. There's an old saying is, you won't live long enough to make all the mistakes yourself, so you better learn from other people's mistakes. And I just really tickled this. Daniel is such a great book. It's so unique, utterly, utterly unique in so many ways. Some of the best stories in the Bible. Any other comments?
It does bring to mind Jesus' parable about the rich man who built the storehouses. It said, in his heart, he's satisfied. I've got many years of food or whatever. God said, you fool, this very night your life is demanded of you.
Yep, Luke 12:19. I had that in my notes too. That's exactly what it reminded me of. So you are in good shape for many years. Okay, anything else, anybody? Well, thank you for putting up with me. Then we're done early, so you have a little more time.